instructions. This concludes the test of the emergency alert system.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and on the web at kfai.org. Radio without boundaries.
You are listening to North Star Stories, voices from where we live, a daily newscast about what it means to live in Minnesota.
Today, the governor celebrates the pheasant hunting opener. Then, northern communities concern over the wild rice sulfate standard. And a Duluth nonprofit wins a national innovation award. I'm Gracie J. Governor Tim Walz joined hunters in Ortonville and Big Stone County to celebrate Minnesota's 13th annual Governor's Pheasant Hunting Opener. The governor's hunting party harvested two roosters during the morning outing earlier this month. Governor Walz thanked residents and volunteers for the conservation work happening in Big Stone County and across the state. The governor also announced that next year's Governor's Pheasant Hunting Opener will be in Northfield. The pheasant hunting season runs through January 4th. Well, in today's main story, new permits for the U.S. Steel Keetac facility reignite debate over wild rice sulfate standard in the northern part of the state. Megan Buffington, a reporter for AMPR's member station KAXE, has this report.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Katie Pratt. I work with the Minnesota Office of Collaboration and Dispute Resolution, and I'll be serving as the moderator this evening.
Around 400 rangers packed into the Iron Trail Motors Event Center in Virginia for a chance to address the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The agency is in the process of issuing new wastewater permits for U.S. Steel's Keetac mine, but the inclusion of a decades-old, rarely enforced standard is dredging up a lot of emotions. Those who rely on mining for their livelihoods worry that the PCA's efforts to finally enforce the limit will devastate the Iron Range. Environmental and indigenous advocates say enforcement is long overdue to protect sacred Monoman and keep Minnesota's water clean. Leanna Goose is a leader of the Rise and Repair Alliance and a Leech Lake band member.
By upholding Minnesota's sulfate standard, we hold companies accountable for their pollution and protect the food that has nourished people here for generations.
Minnesota's wild rice sulfate standard was adopted by the PCA in 1973. The protective measure recognized the plant's environmental, economic, and cultural importance. Wild rice, Monoman in Ojibwe, is an important food source for waterfowl, and the plant is central to Ojibwe identity and way of life, past, present, and future. Derek Peterson is the business manager for Laborers Local 1091.
I strongly urge you to update the wild rice sulfate standard with all the research, science, and site-specific variables. The current 10 is unrealistic level, and wild rice has been proven to be successful at up to 1,600 milligrams.
The site-specific standard was proposed by the PCA in 2017. The agency came up with the rule after the legislature told them to overhaul the existing standard. But in 2018, an administrative law judge rejected the rule change, writing the PCA failed to prove that the new standard would be, quote, equally or more protective of wild rice waters. Hay Lake is small and remote. It's the first wild rice water downstream of Keetac. U.S. Steel has been discharging into the water for decades and says there's still healthy wild rice growing there. But environmental groups recently visited and say the rice looks sick. Mike Maleska is a former United Steelworker Unit president and now part of the nonprofit Water Legacy.
What was the rice like here when you were young?
It went from just to the right of the inlet over there, about where that tree line drops off. It came all the way, that dense, all the way around the lake.
This really hurts. This really hurts here.
There's a lot more to the sulfate story. Read more about the complex saga and recent updates at kaxe.org. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Rural Pathways, based in Duluth, has been named the Platinum Award winner in the 2025 Wings of Innovation Child Care Resource and Referral Agencies Award. Rural Pathways received the award for its enhanced two-tier provider partnership model. The model helps address rural child care shortages by bringing together employer tax credits and community funding. The unique program gives more families access to quality child care. Rural Pathways co-founder said the recognition highlights how rural providers can transform access to high-quality, sustainable care when given the right tools and partnerships.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Minnesota experts see a substantial drop. Then, as we get closer to the elections, we take a look at the use of ranked choice voting in some areas of our state. And a Native All-American football game returns to U.S. Bank Stadium. I'm Chantel Sings. Minnesota exports fell 19% in April, May, and June, totaling $5.8 billion, according to the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Experts say the decline is driven mostly by reduced oil and fuel exports to Canada. While exports to Canada, Mexico, and China dropped sharply, shipments to Ireland, the UK, Germany, and Switzerland increased, reflecting new trade missions and global outreach efforts. Sectors showing strength included pharmaceuticals, electrical equipment, and agricultural products like dairy and honey, which all posted gains despite the overall downturn. Next, this November, voters in five metro area cities will once again use ranked choice voting to pick city leaders. For this week's election special, Zan Holston explains how ranked choice voting works.
For Gene Massey, executive director at ranked choice voting advocacy group Fair Vote Minnesota, the goal is making sure voters feel confident using it.
We want them to go in familiar, prepared, and ready to rank.
The process itself is simple, and election workers are there to walk voters through it.
This is the ballot. It has two sides. This election uses ranked choice voting, so choose up to three candidates in order of your preference.
Voters mark their first, second, and third choice candidates on their ballots. When votes are tallied, if no single candidate gets more than 50% of the first choice votes, the candidate with the least number of votes is eliminated, triggering an instant runoff vote.
So if you voted for that candidate who was eliminated, your second choice counts in the next round of counting. And then we just go through that process of eliminating and reallocating those second choice votes until one candidate reaches that majority threshold.
In some cases, even after second and third choices are tallied, no one gets over 50%. In that case, the candidate with the most votes overall wins. Massey said that's why voter education is so important, so people understand how the rankings come into play at each stage.
Helping people understand what their second choice votes really mean and encouraging them to rank all the way down the ballot if they have a preference all the way down the ballot.
She said if you only want to rank one candidate, that's fine, but don't fill all three spots if you don't genuinely support three candidates. Ranking someone you dislike could end up helping them.
And don't make it any more complicated than that. There's no strategy to it. Just rank your preferences.
Minneapolis and St. Paul first adopted ranked choice voting for municipal elections in 2009 and 2011. St. Louis Park joined in 2019, followed by Bloomington and Minnetonka in 2021. Massey said one big reason cities made the switch was low turnout in primaries.
5%, maybe 10% in a good year. That's a very high-cost election with very low unrepresentative turnout.
Ranked choice voting combines the primary and general elections into one.
We do an instant runoff instead of a two-round runoff in the single decisive election in November when turnout is highest and most diverse.
Massey said ranked choice also increases the diversity in the candidate field. Those who might struggle to make it through a primary get a chance to stay in the race longer and reach more voters.
I can run, be a voice in that process, all the way to November, give that choice to the voters, and win or lose, I was able to help shape where the conversation for the future of our community goes.
Voters can go to rankyourvote.org to see their races, check debate calendars, and even practice ranked choice voting on the most Minnesotan of questions, what's the best state fair food? Voters can also go to the Minnesota Secretary of State site to view a test copy of their ballot that they can fill up beforehand and take to the polls to ease those election day jitters.
It's very simple. Practice and bring it to the polls with you.
For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
You are listening to North Star Stories. 70 of the nation's top Native American high school athletes will take the field at U.S. Bank Stadium this December for the 2025 Native All-American Football Game. The event set for Sunday, December 14th, is hosted by the Native American Athletic Foundation in partnership with the Minnesota Vikings and the NFL. The event aims to promote athletic excellence, college readiness, and leadership among Native youth. More details and applications are available at nativeathletes.org.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's stories, tribal leaders in our state brace for the impacts of the federal government shutdown. Then, a northern community is adjusting to accommodate a controversial new industry. And Minnesota launches a drinking water action plan. I'm Gracie J. Well, tribal leaders across the state are preparing for possible disruptions to essential services. The National Congress of American Indians hosted a webinar with more than 1,000 tribal officials to discuss potential impacts of the federal government shutdown, particularly on the Indian Health Service, or IHS. Some IHS programs that receive funding in advance are not impacted, but others, including tribal health facilities, are likely seeing delays in payments. Experts are saying that the shutdown will have a negative impact on health care in Native communities in our state. Next, Ambers member station KAXE's newsroom reports on how a northern community is accommodating the new cannabis industry. Victor Palomino talks to KAXE news director Chelsea Perkins.
As industries shift across Minnesota, the small city of Black Dog is seeing new business move in, and with them, new challenges. In this month's report from the KAXE newsroom, news director Chelsea Perkins shares how the region is adapting to the growing cannabis industry.
Well, we recently became aware that in the city of Black Duck, a cannabis manufacturing company was looking at reusing an industrial building that had recently been shuttered. Anderson Fabrics, a longtime business here that was acquired by another company in 2021 and earlier this year laid off 100 employees.
The proposed cannabis facility has city officials working quickly to develop ordinances and decide how and where this business can operate.
Black Duck already had an ordinance in place that was required by the state to be in place by the beginning of this past year, but now they're having to amend it in order to allow this business.
But the main point of debate right now is the facility's proposed location.
So what happened was where this business is located is really close to a Head Start center, so an early childhood center, and the ordinance was like, you can't have businesses, cannabis businesses, within a certain number of feet from schools or daycares. So they've had to relook at that and say, how can we accommodate this new business that wants to move in? Of course, the daycare itself is in an industrial area. It would actually used to serve Anderson Fabrics employees. So it's a little bit of a unique situation as well facing the Black Duck City Council.
KAXE reporters attended recent Black Duck City Council meetings, where residents voice a wide range of opinions. The city has held several opportunities for public comment, giving the community a chance to share their thoughts directly.
Ultimately, the council did move forward with amending this ordinance in order to pave the way for this new business and feel that they've done their due diligence, that this business has a good reputation in places that it has been otherwise, and will ultimately be a benefit to Black Duck's residents.
For the company behind the proposal, this isn't the first time working with local officials. According to KAXE, they operate a similar facility in Michigan.
They bought a foundry to turn into a cannabis production facility. And, you know, they say that they could bring around 150 jobs to the city of Black Duck. So there's a lot at stake here when it comes to the future of the city of Black Duck and the type of industry that would be there.
To hear this and more news from the Northeast,
please visit our website, kaxe.org, or follow us on Facebook or Instagram.
This is Victor Palomino for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Minnesota officials have launched the state's first drinking water action plan, a 10-year strategy to ensure safe and sufficient drinking water for everyone in the state. The plan, led by the Minnesota Department of Health, focuses on protecting water from source to tap and tackling longstanding threats. The plan's five goals include protecting water sources, building resilient infrastructure, managing risks, and supporting small systems and private well users. Officials say the plan will ensure every Minnesotan has access to clean, safe water.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
A new report raises concerns about the fossil fuel industry. Then, we learn how an African immigrant community in Minnesota celebrates the changes of season. And crane migration peaks in East Central Minnesota. I'm Chantel Sings. A new report is raising concerns about the negative impacts of oil and gas drilling, more specifically, the effects it's having on the state's Black, Latina, Indigenous, and low-income communities. The report aims to bring attention to those impacted by the fossil fuel industry and the financial institutions responsible for financing, insuring, and investing in it. This is the fifth report from the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, a climate justice organization established to engage and unite women worldwide. The organization released its inaugural report in 2021. In today's main story, every year, millions of the Oromo people gather in Ethiopia to celebrate Iricha, a festival that marks the change of seasons. Reporter Faya Adam explains the importance of the holiday for the Oromo community here in our state.
Iricha is one of the largest festivals in East Africa, drawing millions to celebrate the beginning and end of the rainy season. In Minnesota, the Oromo community gathers in May and September to honor this centuries-old tradition.
Iricha is Oromo Thanksgiving.
Teferi Tafa is an Oromo novelist and professor at University of Northwestern in St. Paul. He says the festival was traditionally announced with a signal fire and marked by gatherings at rivers or mountains.
The religious leader's duty is to look, for example, Oromo calendar depends on lunar, on the star and the moon. And so he calculates that and then say tomorrow will be Iricha.
Iricha is also a symbol of survival for many Oromos. In the 90s, thousands of Oromos fled to Minnesota due to political marginalization in Ethiopia.
It's a symbol of, you know, resilience. This is something that maybe in the last, in Ethiopia and for about 100 years or so, celebrating this was looked down upon. It had gone underground in a lot of places, or people had stopped to do that.
Teliel Gobena is a volunteer on the marketing committee for the Minnesota-based Iricha organization.
Within it, it has a message of renewal, asking for forgiveness, thanking, so taking some pause and time to say thank you. All of those kind of things are in the concept of what it means to be an Oromo. And therefore, people look at it as like almost a symbol of what of our identities.
Oromos in Minnesota gather at a selected park in the Twin Cities to celebrate. People attend in cultural clothes and sing and dance to traditional songs, washing fuzik bedena, sour pancake-like flatbread.
If there's Oromos, even in few number, they still celebrate.
Tolche Gamachu is a board member for the Iricha organization. He says Oromo youth are a big part of Iricha becoming popular.
Our youth in college and universities are looking at their background and history and why Oromo do that, and the tradition and the belief and the hope that Iricha gives and the reason we do. They even teach other non-Oromos.
Here in Minnesota, Iricha stands as a reflection of the Oromo community's growth. For North Star Stories, I'm Faya Adam.
You are listening to North Star Stories. It's migration season at the Sherburne National Wildlife Refuge in East Central Minnesota, where thousands of sandhill cranes are making their annual stopover on their journey south. From mid-October through early November, huge flocks of these prehistoric-looking birds gather to roost in the wetlands overnight and forage in nearby farm fields during the day. A crane viewing map and tips are available on the Friends of Sherburn website at exploresherburn.org. The Friends of Sherburn Group is hosting an online Sandhill Celebration fundraiser to help protect crane habitats and support education programs.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's segment, police investigate racist flyers found in St. Paul. Then, northern residents raise objections to a data center proposal. And Minnesota fights workplace discrimination. I'm Gracie J. St. Paul police are investigating after multiple racist flyers containing hate speech were discovered across the Merriam Park neighborhood. Officers met with a resident who found the flyers on Sherburn Avenue late last week. Similar materials were also recovered on other streets around St. Paul. The flyers contained hateful language targeting the Black community. The Union Park District Council president condemned the messages, calling them, quote, directly opposed to the community's values of diversity and inclusion. Next, as Hermantown city officials propose building a data center just west of Duluth, residents are voicing growing opposition. Frankie Felagi reports.
Around 100 people filled City Hall at Hermantown's most recent city council meeting. Attendees overflowed into the next room. There's conflict over a massive data center proposed on more than 400 acres of current forest and residential land. It would be run by an undisclosed major national company. If approved, construction could start as early as spring, and the building process would last up to 10 years. The city touts the proposal as an economic boost for the area, but locals aren't convinced.
We don't want this.
Residents are expressing countless concerns about the potential data center's water and energy usage, environmental impacts, health effects, and the lack of public information about the project.
The amount of secrecy alone about this is very, very worrisome. Right away, I don't trust you. And I'm sorry, I know some of you. It's the issue of water, electricity, clear-cutting our land, the noise, the destruction, the traffic. This is beyond comprehension to me, why anybody would even want to bring this into our community.
Chad Ronchetti explains why. He's the city's economic development director. Ronchetti said the project would create 40 to 100 full-time jobs.
The project is expected to include high hundreds of millions of dollars in private investment, potentially reaching into billions of dollars in private investment.
Councilors also highlighted the potential for hundreds of construction jobs during the 8 to 10 years of building. Beyond those numbers, though, there's little information about what the data center would be, who would be involved, and how exactly environmental impacts would be handled. A public document released by the city called an Alternative Urban Area-Wide Review highlights why residents are so concerned. Two trout streams and a river run through the site. They're part of 50 wetlands in the proposed parcel. It estimates the project would use 50,000 gallons of city water daily, though it wouldn't use water to cool the computers themselves. Waste-wise, the report says the project would put out about as much carbon dioxide as 3,400 homes annually. That's according to a U.S. Environmental Protection Agency calculator.
We like our trees, our forests, our streams, our animals.
That's Hermantown resident Sarah Lofold at the meeting.
We're going to be dealing with this for the rest of our lives, the rest of our children's lives. How would that affect our communities, our groundwater? We're talking about 1 million square feet of concrete in a forest.
The city council will vote on whether or not to rezone the area to light industrial soon. For North Star Stories, I'm Frankie Flegge.
You're listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota Department of Human Rights, or MDHR, has settled two cases involving blatant workplace sex discrimination. Investigators found that a company in Bemidji fired a woman truck driver, telling her that driving a concrete truck was, quote, not women's work. In another case, a Thief River Falls business refused to hire a man as a flight attendant, claiming women were, quote, better for the job. The MDHR commissioner says these cases demonstrate that while progress has been made, there is still work to be done to ensure all Minnesotans can work free from discrimination.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
You're listening to Minnesota Native News. I'm Murray Rock. This week, we feature an all-Indigenous art exhibit curated by Hyde E. Erdrich, and actor Dallas Goldtooth shares details about his new role. First, producer Dan Ninham brings us the story of Once Upon a Shore, an exhibit at the Minnesota Marine Art Museum.
Earlier this year, the Minnesota Marine Art Museum launched a show of all Indigenous artists curated by Hyde E. Erdrich. Artists and authors include Tashia Hart, Courtney M. Leonard, Cole Red Horse Taylor, Jonathan Thunder, and Minnesota's poet laureate Gwen Nell Westerman. The exhibit, Once Upon a Shore, will be on view until January 4th, 2026.
They had asked me to do literary arts. I was going to make sure that I work with all Native artists from Minnesota or with connections to Minnesota.
That was author and curator Hyde E. Erdrich, enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa.
You know, I was thinking about the audience and who is going to walk in there. Everything from school kids to elders, Native people, non-Native people. I wanted there to be audio so people could listen to a story. I wanted there to be children's age works and the books there for them to sit down on a couch and snuggle up with a book.
For Hyde, curating went beyond selecting artists with connections to storytelling.
The collaboration as a curator is often to be able to represent people the way they want to be represented, to listen to them and make sure the show shows them in the light that their work was meant to be seen.
Tashia Hart, Red Lake Ojibwe citizen, used a video short in her installation. Her work often connects to her Anishinaabe background.
That inspiration for Clay Woman Falls in Love with the Lake came from living on the shore, going through all the emotions of what it's like to, you know, be a human being and, you know, take in the energy and the sights and the life that is on the shore there.
Find out more about Once Upon a Shore at mmam.org. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Dan Ninham.
Next, producer Deanna Standing Cloud talks with Minnesota actor Dallas Goldtooth about his newest role.
Frogs, I didn't say anything about frogs.
You did. Frogs in the ice.
Oh, you're talking about the Niihei.
Yeah.
Yeah, they sing to warn us about the ice break before the river floods.
I think that the more we hear from rural America, the more we hear from Native communities, I think it helps us expand our knowledge about where people are at and what we really need in order to build a better community and better future.
Dallas Goldtooth is an enrolled citizen of the Chanchayape Lower Sioux Indian community right here in Minnesota. He's an actor best known for his comedic character as The Spirit, featured on the Hulu series Reservation Dogs. He talks to us about his newest role as Hutch, a U.S. Marshal in the Apple TV series The Last Frontier.
I was actually been excited. I've been looking forward to a role like this to flex those other acting muscles to be a more serious or dramatic actor.
The Last Frontier is a high-action thriller starting off with a plane crashing in the middle of the Alaskan wilderness that is carrying several violent prisoners. The storyline draws in viewers from the very beginning, keeping them guessing as it unfolds.
It was nerve-wracking, I ain't gonna lie, but I think that it was exciting overall for me.
To prepare for the role, Dallas reached out to actual Native U.S. Marshals.
One of the marshals I talked to was Marshal Ecofi. He was the lead U.S. Marshal out of South Dakota, and he was actually the lead investigator on finding the killers of Anna Mae Aquash.
As a Native actor, Dallas also makes note of the land he's working on.
I always want to do my part to be like, who's the local community? Whose land am I on? And build relationship there. So
in 2025, Dallas is among a growing pool of emerging Native actors.
I think that we've seen some tremendous strides made in Indian country over representation at a larger scale. I've seen us as Indian country really take to the next level to collaborate in a way that's building stronger and lasting relationships with people.
You can watch Dallas's new series, The Last Frontier, on Apple TV. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Deanna Standing Cloud.
Minnesota Native News is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Pangea World Theater.